The Senate will be in order. Will everyone in the Senate and the galleries please rise for the prayer by the chaplain and remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Ellen Eccleston wrote, "To think too quickly of prayer as a matter of words can be a most discouraging thing. Lord, too many seem to think too much of what they say, and it interferes with what you might desire for us to pray. So help us this day to open a channel between us and you, and help us to be thoughtful to what you encourage us to express our feelings and thoughts with you, so that they may be effective actions. In your holy name we pray. Amen."
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Secretary, call the roll.
Senators Brown, Callahan, Chappelle Nadal, Crowell, Cunningham, Curls, Dempsey, Dixon, Engler, Goodman, Green, Justice, Kevany, Kehoe, Kraus, Lager, Lamping, Lemke, Mayer, McKenna, Munslinger, Nieves, Parson, Pierce, Ferguson, Richard, Ridgway, Roop, Schaaf, Schaefer, Schmidt, Stouffer, Wasson, Wright Jones.
Senator from the 7th. Senator from the 7th is present. Senator from the 10th. Senator from the 10th is also present. A quorum being established, the Senate is in session. Secretary, please read the journal.
Journal of the Senate, second regular session.
Senator from St. Charles.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move further reading of the journal be dispensed with and the same be approved as though having been fully read.
You've heard the motion of the Senator from the 23rd. All those of the opinion that motion shall prevail say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Photographers from KRCG-TV, the University of Missouri, and Mizzou football have been given permission to take pictures in the Senate chamber today.
Thank you, Senator. Introduction of guest. Senator from Cole, for what reason do you rise?
I would like to introduce some very special guests, Mr. President.
Proceed.
Today, Mr. President, we have a group of very special folks with us. I'm sure you've noticed the large bodies in the chamber. It's my distinct privilege to introduce the special guest from the University of Missouri. We are most pleased to welcome to the chamber this morning the new president of the University of Missouri system, Tim Wolf, who just began his duties last week. Welcome, Mr. President. Also, we have 30 members of the 2011-2012 Mizzou Tiger football team, along with Coach Gary Pinkel and Athletic Director Mike Alden with us this morning. We're proud to have these folks to the Capitol today. They are the 2011 Independence Bowl winners, and the trophy is here at the Capitol as the Tigers beat North Carolina by a score of 41-24. We will be presenting a resolution to the coach and the players in just a few moments, but if you would allow me, I'd like to just read a couple of things on here. Mizzou now is one of only six schools in the BCS League to win a minimum of 8 games in each of the last 6 seasons, and 48 wins over the past 5 seasons ranks them as 9th most in the nation among BCS conferences. And the most important statistic on this resolution, Mr. President, is Mizzou led the Big 12 Conference in football APR, academic progress rate, and has graduated 96% of its seniors over the last 6 years. Please join me in congratulating Coach Pinkel and the Mizzou Tigers for a great season.
The chair would like to remind everyone in the upper galleries and on the sides, flash photography is not allowed in the Senate when we are in session. Senator from Cole, you still have the floor.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. President. Finally, I'd like to make sure that everybody knows the team will be in the House Lounge from 10:30 to 11 to sign autographs and pose for photos. And last, on a personal note, the Senator from Boone from the 19th would have loved to have been here this morning. He is very ill and under the weather, and I know that he passes on his heartfelt congratulations as well to the team and to the staff of the university, because that is in his district, and he wishes he could have been here and regrets that he couldn't be. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator. Senator from the 16th.
Introduction of a very special guest, Mr. President.
Proceed, Senator.
In the gallery up behind us, I would like to introduce to the body, and if they would stand up, the Missouri Society of Anesthesiologists. These are the very important men and women that anesthetize us for many procedures and surgeries and make sure that it's done safely and that we wake up. So let's please make them feel very welcome.
The Senate will please join us in welcoming the friends in the upper gallery. We're on the order of business of introduction of guests. The Senator from Green. Senator from Green.
I am pleased to be joined by 42 sixth graders from the Springfield Scholars Program at Central High School. They're touring the Capitol and attending a celebration for gifted education in the first floor rotunda this morning at 11. Their teacher is Becky Smith. They're in the upper gallery behind me. I'd ask that they stand and be welcomed to the Missouri Senate.
If the guests of the Senator from Green would please stand, we welcome you to the Missouri Senate. We're on the business of introduction of guests. The Senator from the 5th. Oh, I'm sorry, Senator.
That's quite all right. I have another group that I would like to welcome to the Missouri Senate. The Citizen Scholar Award is presented by the MSU Board of Governors to recognize outstanding citizen scholars at Missouri State University. Each recipient has contributed to the university, advanced the university's public affairs mission, and engaged in extracurricular accomplishments and or in significant service activities in the community. They're seated on your right and my left. There are five from around the state. I would ask that they all stand and be recognized. Immediately afterwards, we're going to be taking pictures with each of their individual senators in the Bingham Gallery. But I want to congratulate them and ask that they be welcomed to the Missouri Senate as well.
Well, welcome to the Missouri Senate. Thank you for being here today. Senator from the 15th.
Thank you, Mr. President. Here today in the upper gallery is the state chapter of the March of Dimes. Mary Elizabeth Grimes is here. She's the state director, and Suzanne Dalton, who's the chair of public policy. The March of Dimes is a charitable not-for-profit that most people are probably familiar with. Its primary goal is education and prevention of premature births. Since 03, their fight to save babies has strongly been characterized by their prematurity campaign. The rising incidence of premature birth has demanded action. The March of Dimes has really stepped up to the plate and initiated an intensive multi-year campaign to raise awareness and find the causes of prematurity, and would ask that my colleagues make them feel welcome as they join us here today.
If the guests of the Senator from the 15th would please rise, welcome to the Missouri Senate. Thank you for being here today. We are on the order of business of introduction of guests. Introduction of guests. Seeing none, petitions, memorials, remonstrances. Resolutions. Concurrent resolutions. Introduction of bills. Introduction of bills. Senator from Polk.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have two bills.
Send your legislative agenda forward. Secretary, please read the bills.
Senate Bill 817, introduced by Senator Parson, an act relating to initiative and referendum petitions.
Senator?
No explanation needed.
He has one more.
Read the next bill.
Senate Bill 818, introduced by Senator Parson, an act relating to motor vehicle registration.
Senator, would you like to explain how you're growing government?
No explanation needed, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator. Introduction of bills. Introduction of bills. Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of reports of standing committees.
Reports of standing committees, the Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Committee on Rules, Joint Rules, Resolutions, and Ethics has a report.
Please send the report forward. When the report arrives at the dais, Secretary, please read the report.
Mr. President, your Committee on Rules, Joint Rules, Resolutions, and Ethics, to which was referred Senate Joint Resolution 26, begs leave to report that it has examined the same and finds that the joint resolution has been truly perfected and that the printed copies furnished to senators are correct. Also, Senate Bill 701 begs leave to report that it has examined the same and finds that the bill has been truly perfected and that the printed copies furnished to senators are correct. Respectfully, Senator Dempsey, Chairman.
Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, Senate will go to the order of business of Senate bills for perfection, the formal calendar.
Senate bills for perfection. Senate Bill 577, the Senator from Lawrence. The Sergeant of Arms could please summons the Senator from Lawrence. Senator from the 23rd.
Mr. President, would you please place that bill on the informal calendar?
It shall be placed on the informal calendar. Senate Bill 749, the Senator from the 24th.
Mr. President, I ask that Senate Bill 749 be brought up for perfection.
You've heard the motion of the Senator from the 24th. All those of the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The bill's before the body. Senator from the 24th.
With that, Mr. President, I have a floor substitute. Copies of the substitute have been distributed.
Send the substitute forward. You're requesting a waiver of the reading. Hearing no objection, that shall be granted. Senator from the 24th, would you like to move for the adoption and explain your substitute?
Certainly. The substitute is technical in nature. What it does, it simply renames subsections of subdivisions and clarifies other terms. And with that, I move for the adoption of the substitute.
The Senator from the 24th has moved for the adoption of the Senate substitute. Are there any members who wish to be heard on that motion? Senator from the 10th is on her feet. For what reason do you rise?
To inquire of the Senator from the 24th.
Senator from the 24th, do you yield?
I do yield.
Proceed.
Thanks, Senator. I wanted to quickly, this is the first I've seen this substitute. I wanted to quickly ask you what the differences are between the original and the substitute.
Yeah, all we're doing is we're moving sections of the original bill up into Section 191, so that notwithstanding any other provisions of law, the contrary to now applies to the next three paragraphs, where before it wasn't clear necessarily that it did.
And I'm sorry, I'm having a little trouble hearing you today. I'm not sure. I think it's the sound system. I don't know if you can pull up your microphone.
How about that?
That's a little better. Thank you.
Okay.
I apologize.
So essentially what we've done is if you go to the original bill and the substitute, what we've done is we pushed the first three chapters up into Section 191 such that, like, if you look at in the original bill, 191.724, notwithstanding any provision of the law to the contrary, that phrase, and that it's not so clear that applies to the next two sections. And what we've done is we've made it clear that they actually do, that phrase now does apply to the first three sections.
Oh, okay. So it now applies to the entire Section A.
Yes. No employer, no governmental entity, all those things. That,
okay.
That phrase, notwithstanding the provision of the law to the contrary.
Okay. And so that's the first change. And then the second one?
If you go to, in Section 3, under no governmental entities, that where how it starts, then it goes down. If you look at penalize a health plan, an employee. Okay, so I'll read the. If you've got 749 in front of you, I'll read the substitute so you can see in that section what's changed.
Okay.
So no governmental entity, public official, or entity acting in a governmental capacity shall discriminate against or penalize a health plan. That's how it started. Now it says, no government entity, public official, entity acting in a governmental capacity shall discriminate against or penalize an employee, self-employed person, employer, health plan provider, health plan sponsor, health care provider, or any other person entity because, and then the rest is the same, and then the last part of the section is to obtain or provide coverage for, pay for, participate in, or refer for abortion, contraception, or sterilization in a health plan.
Okay, so instead of just reading entity, it now says any other person or entity. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, that makes sense. So that's the second one. And then and the third one, you added the self-employed.
Excuse me?
Three members on the floor. Senator from Cole, for what reason did you rise?
Mr. President, I seek unanimous consent to introduce a very special guest.
Hearing no objection, proceed, Senator.
Thank you. First, I'd like to apologize to my two Senate colleagues to my right, and I'll thank you for allowing me to interrupt the debate. To my left and to your right, Mr. President, we have another group of state champions, and this is another black and gold group. From St. Elizabeth, Missouri, we have the 2011 state softball champions. They're from Miller County, and they're here with us to see what's happening in the Capitol today. And I know that they're missing being in school, but they're happy to be here and watching the debate go on here in the Missouri Senate. Four team members from this team made All-State: pitcher Aaron Strump, catcher Kelly Hackemeyer, and infielders Maggie Scholl and Morgan Wilde. The Lady Hornets have made 7 trips to the Final Four and have taken first place 4 times since 1991. They are proudly joined today by coaches Peggy Weberg, Diane Juergensmeyer, and Principal Jana Massman. I ask that the Missouri State softball champions from St. Elizabeth High School be made welcome today in the Missouri State Senate.
Will the guests of the Senator from Cole please stand? Thank you for being with us, and congratulations on your good work. We're on the motion of the Senator from the 24th. The Senator from the 10th is inquiring and has the floor. Senator from the 10th.
Thanks. Senator, and so in what we've done on the third change is that, and you've already, I think, read that to me, it adds self-employed person and it rearranges the orders of person and entities to
Correct.
Include employee, self-employed person, employer, health plan provider, health plan sponsor, health care provider, or any other person or entity. So that was simply just rearranging
Right.
the order and then adding self-employed. So now this language, or should this act pass, then it will also be implied to self-employed individuals.
Correct.
I've got a question about that, but before I get to that question, let me go over the last two changes. It said it adds pay for. Where does it add the pay for?
Excuse me, I didn't hear your question.
Okay, I'm sorry.
The pay for. Okay, so on the original bill, what was the third section that starts with no governmental entity, that now ends, the last part of that ends, to obtain or provide coverage for, pay for, participate in, or refer for abortion, contraception, and sterilization in a health plan.
So that's in page three.
So pay for is there.
Or section three.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I see that. And then how has the emergency clause been modified? Says that modifies the emergency clause language in section
Exactly. It just changes persons and entities and reverses the order.
Okay. So to reflect
Yes.
the rest of it.
Yes.
And what was the reasoning behind the emergency clause?
The concern that federal actions would, as they go forward and become enacted, that we would have the ability to suggest that the state has taken a different course.
Okay, now, it's my understanding, Senator, that this is already in state law. Is that correct?
Some aspects of it are, others are not.
Okay, what's the difference between this bill and the existing state law?
That's fine. You have the floor. We're discussing the substitute. If you wanted to wait until we got into discussion of the bill, we could do that, or we can take these things now.
Well, Senator, it's my inquiry, and
okay,
I'm no longer
good.
Talking about the substitute, and I'd like to ask about
Sure.
what the difference is between this and the existing law.
Okay. First of all, as I would describe the bill reaffirms the right of employers to offer an employment benefit, in this case health care, and to pay for that benefit and to offer a plan that's consistent with their religiously held beliefs. It also empowers employees to participate in a health care plan and to pay for some portion of their own health care. It's also consistent with their beliefs. The difference with respect to existing law and those two groups is that it introduces sterilization as something that they can exempt themselves from paying for that action. That's new to the protections that employees and employers have today. So that's the new part of the law there. And then what's very new is that that this action sets forth the obligation of the Attorney General to defend the rights of those employers and employees, as well as allow those individual employer employees who feel their rights have been infringed upon to pursue the courts for action.
Okay, where in the bill does it set up the requirement that the AG, is that section 2?
Correct.
So in the existing law, which I understand is in 376.1199.1, there's no obligation for the AG, and
right.
We're adding that into this one, and it says, whenever the Attorney General has a reasonable cause to believe that any person or entity or group of persons or entities is being, has been, or is threatened to be denied any of the rights granted by this section or other law that protects the religious beliefs or moral convictions of such persons or entities, and such denial raises an issue of general public importance, the AG shall bring a civil action in any appropriate state or federal court. So it's your understanding then under the existing law that the AG would not be able to do that. Is that correct?
Well, I think what this does, it makes very clear the actions the Attorney General is to take.
Okay. Is there any reason why you didn't just add the sterilization and the AG piece to the existing law?
Well, I think when this becomes law, it'll essentially have accomplished that very effort.
Yeah, and I'm from a kind of a clean statute book perspective. Is there any reason why you didn't just add?
No, this is the course we decided on, or I decided on.
I'm sorry, Senator, I just received a one of those messages that comes in from the side chamber, and I wasn't... wasn't sure how I should respond to that at this point. Okay, so you're saying that you just made the decision that you were going to introduce your own piece of legislation and that you preferred that method over amending the existing legislation. Is that correct?
Yes.
Mr. President?
Senator from the 10th.
May I inquire of you?
State your inquiry.
Mr. President, I would like to allow you to introduce some special guests, but I am not at this time willing to yield the floor. I would be happy if you'd like to do that from the chair, if that's acceptable, but otherwise I'm not ready to yield the floor at this time.
The chair would seek unanimous consent to introduce guests. Seeing no objection. In the upper gallery are a group of students from Savannah, Missouri, some gifted students from 2nd through 6th grade at the Capitol today, watching our government work and advocating. If the guests from Savannah would please stand, I would like my colleagues to join me in welcoming them to the Missouri Senate. Thank you, Senator. Senator from 10th has the floor and is inquiring of the Senator from the 24th.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator, I just had one more question as it relates to the self-employed person. I'm having a hard time figuring how the self-employed person works into this, because right now, presumably a self-employed person would have to purchase their own health care and they could make those decisions for themselves. Is this, I guess, what was your thinking behind putting the self-employed part into the bill?
It's just to make the definition of employer all-encompassing, so someone could, in fact, be self-employed and be an employer at the same time.
Okay. Thank you, Senator. Mr. President?
Senator from the 10th.
Mr. President, I have an amendment.
Please send your amendment forward. Has it been distributed, Senator?
It has not been distributed. I would request a waiver of its reading, and I will not close on this amendment until it has been distributed.
Hearing no objection to the request for the waiver of the reading, it shall be waived. The senator from the 10th will not be recognized to close on this amendment until it has been distributed. Senator from the 10th, would you like to move for the adoption of your amendment and explain it?
Yes, Mr. President, I would move for adoption of my amendment. Mr. President, this is an amendment to strike contraception from this bill. While I understand that there may be some moral and religious objections to several different things, contraception is something that every woman should have access to, regardless of whether or not her employer has a moral objection to it. And so I would like to have a discussion with this body about whether or not women should have access to contraception, and if they should have access in the least restrictive manner possible. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
The senator from the 10th has moved for the adoption of Amendment Number 1 to the Senate substitute. The senator from the 23rd was the first to his feet. For what reason do you rise?
Mr. President, may I inquire the senator from the 10th?
Senator from the 10th, do you yield?
I do.
Proceed.
Thank you, Senator. Would you tell me how this bill restricts access to women in relation to contraception?
It's my understanding, Senator, that if this were to pass, that an employer, regardless of whether they're a religious employer or not, it would just be any employer, would be able to say that the women that are on their health care plan cannot receive contraception through the health care plan. Now, can those women still then go out and pay out of their own pockets for birth control? Sure they can. Absolutely. But right now, most policies provide that free of cost because it's a huge cost saver for employers and for healthcare plans. And so this would allow a very large group of people to opt out and say, we're not going to provide the coverage for contraception.
So really, it doesn't restrict their ability to get contraception. It may add cost.
Exactly.
To what you're saying.
It would add cost to it.
Okay.
When people who are with other plans who may live right next door or even be in the same family can get it for free of charge.
Are other plans today, are they mandated to provide contraceptive services under their insurance plan?
It's my understanding that under existing law they are, but there is currently in Missouri law an opt-out clause that would already allow religious institutions to opt out.
Okay, so right now you say there is a mandate on contraceptive services
coverage
in state law?
That it's my understanding, Senator. I've got the existing law here in front of me. Oh, I did. All these notes came out. And it's my understanding that coverage for certain obstetrical and gynecological services is covered by 376.1199.1, but there is an opt-out clause.
For a religious exemption?
Yes.
Okay. So, but you grant this in no way infringes on their right to purchase those services?
No, it just makes them pay for it out of pocket, whereas before they might have...
Potentially. Potentially. By giving the employer flexibility and not mandating it, you believe that other employers, though there is a cost savings, would deny that coverage?
Well, we're allowing it if we pass this law.
Right. You're allowing the employer to have the option, though in many cases they may decide to offer it because there would actually be a savings to them related to their insurance plan.
You're right, Senator. They may not opt out of it because the reality is that it is a huge cost savings. There, study after study shows that for every dollar that's spent on birth control, that you actually save about $3 to $4 in health care costs. And it's not just because of preventing pregnancies. It's because of all of the other diseases that are managed with birth control pills.
Okay. I just want to make it clear that we're not in any way infringing upon their ability to purchase those services, really, as it relates to some belief that there may be beyond the religious organizations, employers that might want to deny coverage.
No, we're doing is we're just expanding the pool of employers who can stop providing free access to birth control to their employees.
Okay, so it's really about the cost.
Well, it's a lot about the cost, yeah, Senator.
Right. Okay. Well, we're not saying that they can't purchase those servers.
No, we're saying that something that they used to receive for free will now be something that they have to pay out of their pocket.
That's
in addition
not
to
true.
Everything else.
That's
that they
not
get.
True, because he's the senator from the 24th. It's an option. You're saying that all employers are going to drop this if given the choice, and I think I think you're mistaken.
Well, I guess we'll have to wait and see.
All right. Thank you, Senator.
Further discussion. Senator from Saline, for what purpose do you rise?
Require the Senator's intent.
Senator, do you yield? Senator from the 10th.
I do.
She does. Proceed.
Good morning, Senator. Thank you for the inquiry. One of the things that bothers, this is not aimed directly at you, but since you're on the floor, we'll get an opportunity to discuss it. Why do we, when you become an employer, automatically give up your First Amendment rights? It would seem to me that if you have a religious belief that violates, if you have a deep-held religious belief, to require an employer to do something that violates it, you automatically give up your First Amendment rights to express your beliefs when you become an employer. How does
you,
that
you
happen?
Don't, Senator. You absolutely don't.
Well, why would I be mandated to provide services that violate my beliefs?
Senator, right now in the state of Missouri, we have a law that mandates birth control coverage. And there's an opt-out clause that allows individual institutions, if they have a religious or moral objection, to go ahead and opt out of that. That's also the law of the land nationally. I have offered this amendment because I want to have a conversation. Just like you want to have a conversation about religious freedom, I want to have a conversation today about the access to birth control and why is it under attack in the United States right now. It makes no sense to me whatsoever. And so I would argue, Senator, that you'd absolutely don't give up your First Amendment rights. As a matter of fact, this bill could be laid over indefinitely, and we could all go home, and there is already protection for religious institutions who don't want to provide birth control.
I'm not talking about religious institutions, though. I'm talking about my individual rights, at my First Amendment rights, not some institution's rights, but my First Amendment rights, not to pay for, as an employer, services that I may or may not agree with.
Well, where does that stop, Senator? I mean, right now we're talking about contraception, but I mean, where are we going to stop that?
In my mind, this discussion is not about contraception. It is the ability of the state to tell me what I can believe and what I can't believe, and to violate one of the most important rights I think we have in this country, and one of the rights that this country was founded on. And to me, when you try to bring it down to contraception, that's just the nose under the tent. And I realize we already have mandated laws. I don't agree with that. I think that I should be able to exercise my First Amendment rights as an employer. It just seems wrong. As an employer, I give up my First Amendment rights to decide what I pay for and what I don't pay for.
So where would you stop then? If I were to engage in this debate about religious freedom, which I really don't want to, but where would you stop? I mean, what if, Senator, you had an employee who was pregnant with a child out of wedlock, and that was against your personal beliefs, and you didn't want to provide prenatal care for this individual because she was not married? I mean, what if you didn't want to provide screenings for sexually transmitted diseases? Or what if you were opposed to vaccines and didn't want to provide vaccines? We can't just open it up and say that employers get to pick and choose what health care is given to their employees. Senator, I don't like that this country has an employer-based health insurance system.
Me
I
wish either.
We could. And I think we can agree on that. I think it's absolutely crazy. But the reality is that's where we are. We don't have a choice. That's how we, because of the way we got to this point, that's how it works. And so we can't be in a situation where employers get to be the arbiters of what services they're going to give and what services they're going to hold back.
Senator, this is the first job where I've had anybody pay for my health insurance. My whole life, I have made the decision to buy my own health insurance. And I find it curious that it would seem to me that food is more essential to your health and your life than health insurance is. But we don't mandate employers to pay for food, except, I guess, through the school system. And it just seems to me like that we're backwards. The reason we have employer-based health insurance is because right after World War II, we froze wages, and the only way employers could differentiate themselves from one another was to provide health insurance and other benefits. I think that this has headed us down the wrong road. I believe that, and I don't know how we back it up, but I think we have got to get back to a market-based system, and that we get it. You know, we're getting way out beyond where I wanted to go with this thing. I just think that as an employer, you shouldn't have to give up your religious beliefs to support activities that you don't support.
And Senator, it's my understanding that right now, current existing law, which is 376.1199.1, that it actually already allows employers to opt out of this.
Right, that's appropriate.
Okay,
but you're talking, as you read it before, you were talking about basically.
And my apologies, Senator, but under the existing law, employers can already opt out of coverage.
Okay.
And when I was talking to the senator from the 24th, he explained that the only thing that's different with this bill from the existing law is, number one, that it adds sterilization, and number two, that it brings in a cause of action for the Attorney General to go after anybody who, you know, would require an employer to do that. And so, Senator, I would argue that it's already the existing law in the state of Missouri, and that those protections are already in place, and that today's bill being introduced, because those things already exist, is not about religious freedom. It's about a continued attack on, frankly, women and birth control, because that's how it's being messaged. I mean, I understand where you're coming from, but every time I turn on the television set, all I hear is the story about birth control under attack. I mean, there was this ridiculous hearing in D.C. last week where they convened a group to talk about women's reproductive health, and it was five congressmen. They were all men. I mean, what else is it?
Senator, I don't see any way. I think that some would like to concentrate on contraception and birth control. My concern is it's really an argument about religious freedom. I misunderstood. I thought that only religious institutions could opt out. I was concerned about.
And I understand that. And so, Senator, to that end,
if any employer can opt out, then I'll sit down and shut up for a while. But I do think that we need to concentrate the argument on. In my mind, it's on religious freedom. It's not about any particular.
And to that end, Senator, our existing law already has that. So what I would suggest is that we just put this bill away and start talking about the stuff that we really need to talk about, like tax credit reform,
Senator, and
about education, and about charter school reform.
So, thank you, Senator.
Senator from the second, for what purpose do you rise? Senator from the second, for what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, my microphone is stuck wrapped around my chair.
For what purpose are you being recognized?
Welcome some fantastic people. Introduction to special guests seek unanimous consent.
Seeing no objection, proceed.
I want to introduce a fine group of Missourians up here watching their Senate at action, watching their senator make a complete fool out of himself. But I have a vision. Troy Leadership, or Leadership Troy, is up here visiting from Troy, Missouri. It's a group of the new leaders that are emerging in the business community out of Troy, Missouri. They're up here learning more about state government and how it operates. They're the future of the state. They're going to be leaders in their own communities all across the state as they build their businesses and continue to help their community grow. I'd like the body to please welcome Leadership Troy from Troy, Missouri, up here in the back gallery.
Would the guests of the Senator please stand from Troy, Troy Leadership? Let's give them a round of applause. Thanks for coming to Jefferson City. Yes. Senator, proceed.
Could you please remind them that the Senator from the second is a little bit usually more smooth in his delivery than what they witnessed this morning?
This is standard. This is it. Senator from the first, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. If I could get unanimous consent to introduce some very special guests.
Seeing no objection, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. On my left and your right, sitting on the bench over here, I'm honored to introduce to the body a very distinguished young man, Eric Cochran, who is a social studies teacher and a department chairman at Lindbergh Senior High in the 1st District. Today he was named by the Missouri Department of Elementary and Secondary Education as the 2012 Milken Foundation Educator of the Year. Eric is an outstanding teacher and a recognized leader in our community. I'm very pleased to present him with a resolution today from the Senate. Eric is here with his lovely wife, Jessica, and their two daughters, Kelsey and Kristen. And, Mr. President, if I'd also like to make Kelsey and Kristen honorary pages of the day to serve without compensation, and I'd ask that the body would make them feel very welcome.
That's great. Would the guests of the Senator from the first please stand and be recognized? Congratulations, and the girls will be made pages of the day. Seeing no objection, the chair would also like to introduce the physician of the day. He's from my district back home, from Butler. His name is Dr. Haney. Dr. Haney, would you please stand? And he's accompanied by his lovely wife, Joyce. So, welcome. Let's welcome them to the Senate chamber. Senator from Buchanan, for what purpose do you rise?
To inquire of the Senator from the 24th.
Senator from the 24th, do you yield?
I do.
He does. Proceed.
Thank you. I just have a few questions of, about the bill, which will help me to think about the amendment. First of all, in the first part of the bill, and I'm looking at the committee sub here.
I understand.
The thing is that nobody is going to be required to, I guess, purchase coverage for abortion, contraception, sterilization, right? I mean, that's the essence of it.
Well, no. I mean, it's there's not an insurance mandate in this bill.
Right. But what this is saying is that nobody will be penalized if they refuse the coverage. I'm trying to just kind of boil
No. What it does, it gives the right of an employee, someone who's participating in the plan, as you are fully aware, when you participate in a group health care plan, that you're pooling your resources with other people's resources. And so it gives people who are participating in plans the right to participate in a plan that doesn't cover these specific services.
Okay, well, I'm trying to get my head around how this language does that. And so, first of all, I'm looking at lines 6 through 11. And so I'm going to be a little technical, I guess. Basically, it says no employee, person, other person shall be compelled to obtain coverage for or be discriminated against or penalized for declining or refusing coverage for those services in the health plan if it's contrary to their belief.
Correct.
I mean, fair statement. Okay, so does that imply that the employer must offer that person a plan that does not provide coverage for that?
Yes.
Okay, tell me how that works, because that's my missing thing. What words in there execute that conclusion? Is it that you would discriminate against them by not offering it, or is it that you would penalize them for declining or refusing it by not having an alternate plan?
I think by not having an alternate plan available to them, you would be discriminated against them to the extent that you're offering health care services to another part of your employees that include all those things, and you don't give them the option to be in a plan that excludes those things.
Okay. I'm not 100% certain that I got that when I read this. And I'm 100% with you on this bill. I just want to make sure that it does what the intent is. And so, just to make sure that I'm understanding, if I'm an employee and they come to me and they say, our health plan offers contraception, and I say, well, I want to refuse it. Mm-hmm. I want to decline it. I want to refuse it. That is what it says, discriminated against or penalized for declining or refusing. So I say, I'm declining. I'm refusing. Now, at that point, the employer if the employer doesn't offer me the plan, then you're saying that they're discriminating against or penalizing me.
So, Senator, you can understand how easy it would be to execute this option to offer a plan without things in it.
What I'm trying to say is that this isn't really clear. And it doesn't actually say that the employer must be compelled to provide a plan that doesn't include those three things. I mean, it doesn't say that. It just says that no employee will be discriminated against or penalized. That's different than saying that every employer must offer the plan. I think it's a gaping hole in what I think you want to accomplish. Now, I'm not an attorney. You might want to ask some other people in the room that are attorneys. But that, just to me, as a layperson, doesn't seem to cut it. Okay, because I think that once I decline or refuse, then, you know, it would be like an action that the employer would have to take to then discriminate or penalize. You are prohibiting an action based upon the refusal of the employee. You're not requiring an action on the basis on the part of the employer to then remedy the situation.
Okay, well, I appreciate your thoughts.
Okay, well, that's the first part. And, you know, take it for what it's worth. The next thing is, looking at subdivision 3 on page 2, starting at line 2. My question is, does this stop the employer from requiring the employee who happens to be a medical provider to provide services? In other words, let's just say that I work for you and I'm a doctor. And I say, or you say to me, you've got to perform abortions.
No, this does not go down that path.
It does not.
It does not. It's not
okay.
Specific to.
So an employer is exempted from this.
It's all specific to
government.
The type of
government entities.
Employment benefit that's being offered.
Right. Okay.
Right.
So this subdivision 3 talks about government entities, public officials, governmental companies.
The government can't make me as an employer offer insurance that covers these things.
No, make you as an employee
participate in a plan that covers these things.
Right, but this section doesn't talk about participating in plan. This section talks about obtaining or providing coverage for, paying for, participating in, or referring for. Now, as a physician, as it would apply to me, it would be saying that no government entity, public official, or entity acting in a governmental capacity will tell me, the doctor, that I have to perform abortions, give contraceptives, or do sterilizations, correct?
That's not what we're trying to do in this legislation. We're not trying to speak to your role as a doctor and government's ability to mandate that you perform a service.
Okay, then I understand. There is a problem that pharmacists have, and I've actually had it as a dispensing physician in the past, and you're well aware of it, where a person owns a pharmacy, somebody comes in, wants to have birth control pills.
Legislation is not about that issue.
And you don't intend for it to be?
Absolutely not.
Okay, then in that case, I want you to explain to me how these words, which I'll point out, don't do that.
Well, I too am not a lawyer, as you are not a lawyer. So what your inquiry suggests to me is that you want to be sure what it is we're focusing on. What I'm suggesting to you is that it's specific to employment benefit plans that are offered and what those plans cover or don't cover. To the extent that you have issues concerning that this might be expanding upon what we're trying to do.
Well, I'd love it if you would do this.
I do not. This bill is not meant to do that. So what I'm suggesting is that...
Well, it does.
Okay, that's fine that you feel that way. And, we're on the adoption of a Senate committee sub. If there's an amendment later on that you think that would help to strengthen the focus, I'd be open to that. We can talk about this off the floor before we get to... final vote, all that kind of stuff.
I would be willing to discuss it with you off the floor before we get to final vote, but the thing is what I'm seeing here is that it says that a healthcare provider cannot be penalized for not participating in these things.
Okay, I appreciate you calling that to our attention.
So maybe we should work together and offline.
Okay. Good idea.
Now, just a little deeper. So would this then require, say, a pharmacist who is being paid for by Medicaid, would this prohibit Medicaid from requiring the pharmacist to dispense contraceptives?
No. This is specific to the employers, allowing the rights of the employer to offer a health care plan, which, the rights of an employer today, employers are not mandated. We know what the state mandates are. They're not mandated to offer plans that cover these things. They have the right at any given time to offer no plan. Employers can offer good plans, bad plans, no plans, plans that cover some things, plans that cover other things. That's the way it works today, and that's the way it works in Missouri today. For the first time in our history, we now have the federal government making health care insurance mandates. Some of the mandates are clear and understood and were actually legislated. So some of the mandates, such as expanding coverage to children up to age 26, were very clear and specific. And other mandates in the Affordable Care Act, when it passed, it gave tremendous discretion and power to Health and Human Services Secretary to now create his or her own personal mandates. So I appreciate, Senator, your attention to extreme detail. I appreciate the fact that you come at this as a layperson trying to understand the legalese, and if there is doubt or some concerns and questions in your mind, to suggest to me that you and I and other legal-minded people can come together and make it more specific. But I want to assure you and all of those that may be opposed to this bill that this bill is very specific to employment benefits, specific to what types of health care plans employers can and can't offer.
Okay, I'm going to let you go, but what I've found so far is that, in my opinion, the bill doesn't do something you want it to do, and it does do something that you don't want it to do.
Great.
And so we need to talk about that. And so thank you for the inquiry. Good. Mr. President?
Senator from Buchanan.
To inquire of the senator from the 10th.
Senator from the 10th. Do you yield? She does. Proceed.
I'm not going to turn around because I know that the presiding officer will gavel me down if I do, okay? Did you listen to my inquiry of the senator from the 24th?
Senator, I apologize, but I have a really hard time hearing the debate, and I was also having things thrown at me, so I only heard bits and pieces of it, so I'd be happy to have you explain to me what it was specifically that you were addressing with him.
Okay, well, you're an attorney, and so I would like to get your opinion on this, a couple of things. But first of all, I want to talk about your amendment.
Okay.
And you made the point, I think I heard you say, that we should exclude contraception because it's been shown very much that it prevents cost. It prevents, I mean, it would definitely, if you exclude contraception, it's going to raise the cost of the health care.
Senator, one of the things that I've been talking about with this relation to this bill and the over kind of the big national debate right now regarding these issues is that birth control is used not only for preventing pregnancies, but also for management of several different health care needs. I'm sure that, you know, anything from endometriosis to polycystic ovarian disease, I mean, there are all sorts of things that women use this for. And so my argument is that for every dollar we spend on birth control, we're actually saving costs, health care costs.
Okay, I gotcha. So I got to ask, does abortion prevent costs?
Does abortion prevent costs?
Yeah.
Well, I guess I've never really thought about it that way. I mean, I'm not trying to, I obviously, there's a big difference in this country on opinion when it comes to abortion, and I didn't want to go down that road, so I left abortion and sterilization alone, and I'm just focusing on the contraception piece.
I know, but the thing is you're teasing out the contraception on the basis that it prevents cost. And so I'm just saying to you, I think abortion prevents cost because then you don't have to take care of the kid forever, and you don't have to deal with possible complications of pregnancy. And I would make the same argument that sterilization also prevents cost. I mean, if you've sterilized the person, they're never going to get pregnant. You're going to have to deal with the pregnancy or the cost of the kid.
Well, Senator, if you want to offer an amendment to take out abortion and sterilization, I would support that amendment.
Well, I appreciate that. I'm just wanting to give you the opportunity to tell me why contraception and not the other two things.
Frankly, Senator, because it's my understanding that about 98% of women in this country either use or have used contraception, and I don't think the numbers are near as high for abortion, so I just wanted to go after the one issue that frankly affects most of the people in this country as opposed to something that frankly is very rarely used.
Okay, I accept that. Now, I'd like to ask you about the issues that I was discussing with the senator from the 24th.
Okay.
First of all, just looking at subdivision 1, lines 6 through 11, the senator from the 24th told me that he thought that what was being written here is that if the employer offers a health plan that does include contraception, abortion, or sterilization, and the employee refuses to obtain coverage for it, you know, participate in it, then the employer must, according to that language, then provide coverage that doesn't have that. In other words, in order to extract that person from the pool so that the premiums wouldn't be commingled with those. Do you
Yeah, I do see that, Senator. By the way this is written and including employee, if you have a, let's just say we're talking about my law firm where birth control coverage is in existence, and I have an employee at my firm who says, I don't want to be covered by a plan that provides contraception, then according to this law, the employer would have to provide me with my own plan that didn't cover things that I found offensive.
Okay, and this is the thing. I'm not sure that the court would look at that and hold. And you're an attorney, so let me make my argument. Let's just say that you're the employee and I'm the employer.
Okay.
And you, I know this isn't you, but let's just say that you have the religious or moral conviction that you don't believe in contraception.
Okay.
So I offer you the plan that includes contraception, and you then decline or refuse coverage for it. Okay?
Okay.
Now, you have taken the action of declining or refusing coverage for the contraception. And the law says that in that situation, that you will not be compelled to obtain coverage for, and you will not be discriminated against or penalized for what just happened. Okay?
Okay.
Now, it does not say that the employer will then provide that. It doesn't require an action of the employer. It actually prohibits an action. It says that discrimination or penalization will not occur, which that implies that those actions won't occur. Are you saying that there's an implied action that must occur in order to prevent the discrimination or penalization?
Restate the last part of your question.
Okay, well, see, what I'm saying is, given this situation that has just happened between you and me, this law says that you won't be compelled to obtain coverage for or be discriminated against or penalized. Okay, well, I understand that, you know, being compelled to obtain coverage for, they're not going to do that. But now, to be discriminated against or penalized is an action that somebody would have to take against you for what you did. And what I'm saying to you is, to prohibit an action against you isn't the same as requiring a new action from me to give you coverage. I mean, it's saying I can't now discriminate against you now that you did what you did. But does that carry the same weight? Does that imply then that I now have to go and get another health plan and offer it to you?
Senator, that's what I would argue if I were representing the employee who wanted to refuse the coverage that was offensive to me.
And if you were the employer, you would argue that that's a little vague and that I wouldn't have to do that.
That's exactly what I would argue.
Okay.
And I will say, Senator, that I think there are probably several law schools that would love you to come to work for them drafting test questions, because that was pretty intense. And you could probably get a job with like the Board of Bar Examiners drafting
or Well, I didn't mean to. I just want the bill to do what it's.
No, you've picked out something that is you're dead on. You're exactly right. I mean, and the thing is, Senator, are you familiar with the existing law relating to this? Do you have a copy of that?
Probably not.
Because the existing law, actually, which is 376.1199.1, it already provides all of this that's in the bill, with the exception of two things. And it doesn't include sterilization. It only includes contraception and abortion services. And then it doesn't include this piece about the AG. So it seems to me that, you know, it would make more sense, rather than muddy the waters, that we just amend the existing bill. But, you know, that's it's the prerogative of the senator who's pushing the bill forward to do it how he pleases.
Okay, well, I'm not going to take a whole lot more time, but I want you to turn to page 2 and look at subdivision 3.
Page 2, subdivision 3, okay.
Right. Okay, now here's what I read. No governmental entity, now that might be Medicaid,
okay,
shall penalize an employee, now that might be...
Wait a minute. Where are you?
I'm just picking out the words to make my point.
Okay.
On line 4, so no government entity.
Oh, okay.
And then on line 4, shall penalize an employee, okay, because of such employees, on line 6, okay,
mm-hmm,
unwillingness, on line 9, to, on line 10, participate in, on line 10, abortion, contraception, or sterilization, on line 11. Now, let's just say that the governmental entity is a school district, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And the employee is a school nurse. Now, to me, that's saying that the school district cannot force the school nurse to refer for contraception or to give contraception. Or a person working for the Department of Social Services couldn't do that. I mean, in other words, the governmental entity could be the Department of Social Services and there'd be some clinic or something, a health clinic, which is, I think, required by law, federal law, to give contraception. I mean, I know that you probably would hate that. I might be okay with it, but that is what that's saying, isn't it?
You're right, Senator.
Okay. You've answered my question. Thank you so much for the inquiry.
Thank you,
Mr.
Senator.
President.
Further discussion? Senator from the 11th, for what purpose do you rise?
Well, my purpose, Mr. President, rising is to inquire of the Senator from the 24th.
Senator from the 24th.
How am I recorded, Mr. President?
Do you yield?
I do.
Proceed.
I record happily. Thank you, Senator. I'd like to go. Do you have, and I can get a copy made for you. Do you have Chapter 376 by chance in front of you?
I do.
Okay, on notwithstanding the provisions of the subdivision of subsection 1 of this section, to the contrary, 1 reads, any health care provider may issue to any person or entity purchasing the health care.
I'm sorry, Senator, I can't hear you.
Okay.
So, again, I want to make sure that I'm following you. So I've got this in front of me. So is there...
I'm under the section that deals with the current provisions of law imposed on health care providers. The chapter is called Life, Health, and Accident Insurance.
I got it.
And there
so
is a listing under 4.
Okay. If health benefit plan...
Any health care carrier may issue to any person or entity... A benefit excludes coverage for contraceptives if the use. Now, that's current law.
I understand.
Your bill extends this to, and correct me if I'm wrong, any employee who might feel penalized, any self-employed person who might feel penalized, any employer. So what I mean is current law is the health care provider. Your bill now extends this and creates a potential civil claim, right, handled by the AG, by any person, any employer who feels that they have a moral objection to what's in the health plan, right? Is that what your bill does? So what I mean, current law appropriately deals with this on the health care provider side. Now you are extending a civil claim handled by the AG to any employee, any self-employed employee, any employer who has an objection, moral or religious objection, to something in their health care plan. Is that right?
To the extent that they're forced to offer that health care plan if they're employer, to the extent that they're not able to opt out of the plan if they're employee, I would...
Aren't you, in a way, creating a mandate on employers in reverse, except on the subjects of sterilization and contraception? I mean, aren't you saying that without those except you're in a way creating a mandate on employers, right?
I don't...
You're creating this exclusion of these three subjects. So isn't it sort of a reverse mandate, which the senator from Buchanan was bringing up? Anybody, any employee or employer can now object to anything in the plan, including, and I think he pointed this out, Medicaid. So I, as a U.S. taxpayer, I guess, now can have Attorney General Chris Costi bring a claim because I don't like my tax money paying for something in Medicaid. Is that what your bill does?
No.
How does it not do that? If you say the term you use is what if I feel that I'm compelled or let me get to the discriminated against or penalized. Your language right now is no governmental entity. And to follow up on the senator from Buchanan's point, that could be the state, it could be Medicaid, it could be your local government, it could be the teachers, healthcare provider, it could be the police, it could be the fire, it could be any local government, it could be the state, it could be the Medicaid system, or public official or entity acting in the government shall discriminate or penalize an employee, a self-employed person, an employer. What I'm saying is current law deals and puts this on the healthcare provider side. You are extending this authority to any person, the way I read that, could feel that they're being penalized. I'm a Christian scientist. I don't think the Medicare plan, with my U.S. tax money, should be paying for this. I guess I could go to the AG and present some claim. No, isn't that why in current law it is appropriately an onus on the health care provider, not the employer? Right?
No.
Aren't you creating a mandate on the employer that now any employee who objects to their plan has a cause of action? This is a trial attorney dream.
I would suggest that's not the case, and I, not to speak for the Senator from Buchanan, his issues with respect to Medicaid had to do with compelling someone in medical service from performing an act, which is not the intent of this. In the same chapter, the enrollees now have the right by law to have the ability to opt out of plans that cover these things. Again, I think what this is doing is just extending this to include sterilization, and that's all it's doing.
Well, but the current law deals with the health benefit plans, right? And that's why it's under that section called Life, Health, and Accident Insurance, 376.
I understand.
Now, you're extending that to any employee, employer. Is that correct? No employee, self-employed person, or any other person shall be compelled. If I work for a company that has 1,000 employees, if I work for a company that works for 50 employees, what if I feel defined compelled?
Well, you need to be given the option to be able to enroll in a healthcare benefit plan that doesn't offer these things.
Okay, so I work for a company and I disagree with the management of my company, and they offer all this stuff. Do I now have a cause of action that will be handled by the AG against my employer because I'm being compelled as part of a healthcare ratepayer to pay for all that?
To the extent
the way you have it worded now, you say no employee, employee singular, not employer, employee.
I understand.
Self-employed. Whatever, do I have a cause of action against my company if they happen? And I disagree. I'm a Christian scientist. I am a fundamentalist. I disagree with what my healthcare is doing. Do they now have to have a carve-out for me to where I don't pay for the rest of the pool that I'm a part of in the insurance plan?
Well, first of all, the carve-out here is specific to contraception. But,
okay, I object to all those things. Do I have a cause of action now handled by the AG because I don't want to pay for contraception, abortion, and sterilization, but my company is forcing me to because I'm a rate payer in that health plan?
It's a very easy option for the employer to offer a plan that excludes these things.
What if they don't? Do I have a cause of action the way you have this worded now? I have a cause of action, don't I, handled by Attorney General Chris Koster, who can come in and say, this employee has a moral or religious objection. State law passed by the Senator from 24 says he has a moral objection to this as an employee, and he's part of a pool, and his company didn't offer him another plan. Where's my carve-out? And if the company, I mean, a lot of this discussion this session is about creating jobs, and the problem is there's a reverse part of your bill, which is this creates sort of a mandated health coverage for employers.
I don't think I follow you, Senator. I don't see.
Well, but you're creating a cause of action for somebody who objects to anything that they have a moral religious belief, and let's say the three specific things you mentioned. Right? I have an objection to that. Now, am I being penalized because I'm part of that health pool to pay for all that, and do I have a cause of action? That's why current law puts that on the health care provider. Right?
I understand the point you're trying to make.
Well, I would just point out that, you know, this, I remember this was going to be an amendment on the at-will bill, and or it was in a sub or whatever, so I really didn't have much opportunity
before
then to discuss this, and I was actually very appreciative of the Senator from Buchanan because I thought maybe he agrees or disagrees with what I pointed out, but I think he's pointing out that when you extend to an employee and when you use terms like no governmental entity, well, that's us. That could be Medicaid, right? Or that's Missouri Consolidated. I'm a state employee and I object to something being offered in the insurance pool and the state doesn't give me a carve-out.
And
so my claim of action is that I pay for that.
As a matter of fact, as a member of the state health care plan, you do have a carve-out. You do have the option to not.
What if they don't? Do I have a cause of action?
Well, one might think that it's not just employers that have First Amendment rights to freedom of religion, that employees do as well.
So they do have a cause of action against any employer.
What I suggested earlier, what is new in this bill is it compels the Attorney General as well as gives employees, employers to write for cause of action. That's what's new, as I described earlier, in this bill.
So you're creating a mandate on all employers that they need to insist so they don't get sued, that all the health care providers out there have a carve-out to where they don't charge every employee for all the benefits in the pool. What if I have a moral objection to an end-of-life scenario? What if I'm an employee and I don't want to pay for that mesothelioma guy
those things are not the issues in this bill. It's specific to these issues.
Okay. And you are acknowledging that I have a claim of action through the AG as an employee or employer or individual employee, right? Because you use the word individual.
Right.
All right. I have a cause of action that you're supporting with the AG where I can sue my employer.
Correct.
In a case handled by the AG.
Well, the
and
AG,
this
the AG
session
can go forward,
is about creating jobs and businesses, and we're creating this civil claim handled by the taxpayers through the AG against any employer that any person who has a religious or moral objection to something can pick and choose in their health plan and say, hey, I don't like paying for that as an employee.
Well, again, it's not, they can't pick and choose. It's specific to these things as outlined in this bill.
Okay, they object to those things.
Right.
They now have a claim? They don't like that the Monsanto Corporation XYZ Corporation is paying for these things, and I say, look, I don't agree with those. And I feel aggrieved because I'm part of this insurance pool, and I feel compelled, and financially there's a cost, and you even added the word pay for. I mean, okay, there's my claim. And I go see the AG and I say, look, I've got the statute in front of me. This used to be on the healthcare provider and now it's on, I'm an individual employee and I have an objection to the plan. I don't like paying for those three things that are in Senate Bill that. Is that really what you want to do? You want to create a claim to where any employee
yes.
can just do that?
Yes, and again, in order for that to ultimately be the course of action of the employees, it's the employer denies the employee the option to participate in a plan that doesn't cover those things. It's a very simple, a mandate is to make somebody
do something. But the employer does not provide the plan. They pay for the plan, they provide the plan, but they don't create the plan.
Made available.
They are victims, not victims, they are participants in the marketplace, right? I mean, how many times do we hear every day that a company goes out and healthcare costs are rising and they shop around?
Right.
They don't set up the plan. At some level, they take what the vendor is offering and choose what's best for them, but they're not the healthcare provider.
Well, of course they choose.
And what if you're an employee of one of these healthcare providers and you have some objection? Do you now have a claim handled by the AG?
No, it's specific to the healthcare plan that your employer makes available to you. Again,
oh, okay, I object
to the marketplace.
I look at Blue Cross and I object to those things because of my moral religious belief.
Well, that would be, your employer would have to offer you a plan that gave you the option to opt out of these three services. It's a very easy thing to execute, Senator, to go to an insurance company and say, we like you to offer a plan for all of our employees, and for some of our employees, we'd like you to offer a plan that has less services. Easy to do. Done. Happens now.
But what if it doesn't? I mean, what if they don't? Don't they have a claim? And my point
well,
is, don't they have a claim under the
point of fact is they do.
You're saying that now the employer can go dictate to a private insurance carrier what's supposed to be in their plan. Right now, that's a marketplace where they make a decision.
I might want to buy
a quarter pounder with cheese for a dollar, but I can't go to McDonald's and tell them that. I have to buy the quarter pounder with cheese at the price that it's being sold at, not what I want to pay for it.
Well, Senator, it's not a very good analogy.
Well, this isn't a very good bill because you're extending this authority to employees. They can have any basic objection to a plan, and now they have civil claim paid for by the AG. I'm sorry my example isn't very good, but the bill isn't very good.
Well, I appreciate
because the reason it's in current law under the healthcare provider is that's where this stuff starts.
Look, the very first decision an employer makes today is the decision to offer healthcare or not to offer healthcare. That's their first decision they make. There's no mandate that they have to offer health care today. That's the first step. And then they go to the marketplace and they decide, are they going to offer a good plan, a bad plan? What are the costs? What percentage of the cost are they going to share with their employees? What percentage are they going to do it themselves? Some decide to self-insure. Of course they have the ability to go to the marketplace and work with insurance carriers to ask in an RFP process to say, we want you to do these things and not do these other things. And when you ask an insurance company to do less, that's an easy thing for an insurance company to execute. It's when you ask them to do more for the same cost that impossibilities arise.
But the word employee kind of changes that, doesn't it? Because what if I'm an employee?
What it means is that
if I'm an individual employee and I'm part of a health insurance pool? Do I have civil claim handled by the AG?
What's your employer now?
Against my employer?
My employer now has to offer me a plan that allows for me to opt out of these services.
What if the marketplace does not afford them the ability to do
that? Well, the marketplace affords them that
today. They still have
your
civil claim, don't they?
The marketplace affords them that today.
Okay. Mr. President, thank you for the inquiry, Senator. Mr. President.
Senator from the 11th.
May I inquire of the Senator from Buchanan?
The Senator from Buchanan County, do you yield to the inquiry?
Yes.
He does proceed.
Thank you. Senator, you're fine. You're still facing the front. I heard your inquiry, and I had actually the similar concerns that you expressed, and I just wanted to just kind of go over, and if I could return to where you were at with the senator from 10th on page 2, paragraph 3, line 2, no governmental entity, that section, were you saying that that could be Medicaid?
Well, as I read it, Medicaid is a governmental entity, and they have employees, and they also deal with health care providers. And then as this is very catch-all, it says, or any other person or entity. And so Medicaid does deal with all of those people, anybody. Basically, it says Medicaid shall, it says no governmental entity shall discriminate against basically anybody. And then it says based upon or because of that person's unwillingness to, and then there's a whole list of things that they could do, that they could, that would, they would be unwilling to do. And one of them is to participate in, another one is refer for. So basically one way to read this would be that a nurse working for a county health department would be, if she did not want, or he did not want to provide contraception, the health department could not force that person to do it. And, you know, I'm okay with that myself, but that the senator from the 24th said that that's not his intent.
Well, and would that nurse then not have, wouldn't somebody then by two, and you went into this a little bit with the senator from 10th, you listed out what's on line 10 and 11 of 3, right?
Mm-hmm.
Would they not then go to 2 and have claim against the state, the hospital, the county, or whatever, because it's pretty specific. It says, has reasonable cause to believe that any person or groups is threatened to be denied any rights granted by this section.
Right, and what I'm saying is
you're referring to rights.
Right, and that's a big enough problem that it demands that Subdivision 3 be fixed, in my opinion.
Well, and then further, it goes on to the law protects the religious beliefs or moral convictions. I mean, I know you probably know from medical school there's people in society who consider themselves to be Christian scientists, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who have set beliefs about all sorts of medical care, about all sorts of preventative care. There are people who have concerns about vaccinations, okay? So I guess his way of dealing with this is to narrow it to 3 subjects. But don't you think, Senator, that the reason it's under 376 in current law is because the legislature probably contemplated that you can't really place this burden on employers, right?
Mm-hmm.
That you can't put in law an assumption that the marketplace is going to automatically provide remedy for this, right? And that's kind of what his bill does, isn't it? It assumes that the marketplace is going to automatically solve all this, and that every healthcare company, and anybody who's dealt with a healthcare company, we know how reasonable and agreeable they are. I'm sorry, Senator, there was some confusion. But anyway, so any healthcare provider, I mean, we're making the assumption that they can resolve all these issues. And I'm just wondering if somebody now doesn't, any employee, and that's the term he uses, employee, now has some claim against their employer, against a healthcare provider, because they have strong beliefs about sterilization, abortion, and contraception.
Well, I guess My concern about subdivision one, which is maybe not require the employer to offer the health plan that does not include coverage for abortion, contraception, or sterilization, if that was held to mean that the employer has to do that, then you made two points that are important. The first one is that there may not be such a plan available on the market.
So does that person now have claim?
Well,
And is his act unintentionally creating a government mandate?
If there weren't such a plan available on the market, would you be discriminating or penalizing the employee, or would you be excused for not having one for them by virtue of there
being
one
available? Well, Senator, I would imagine the employee would have claim, because what if I didn't, as part of my insurance pool, want to pay for that as a ratepayer?
Yes, and that's the second point.
I would have claim and say, I specifically told my employer, the center from 23rd made this point about, well, nobody's taking away anything. Well, yeah, it cost. I now have a claim under the center from 24th bill handled by the AG to say, I now have a claim against my employer because I didn't want to have to pay for this stuff, and the marketplace or they did not provide me any remedy to this. And well, I guess what I get back to is that's why it's already in current law under health care providers, probably, because they probably contemplated that you can't impose something like this on employees or employers, would be my guess.
Yeah, I can see.
Senator, thank you very much for the inquiry, and I really appreciated the inquiry you made earlier. Mr. President, may I inquire of the senator from 10th?
Senator from the 10th, do you yield to the inquiry from your colleague from the 11th?
Gladly. Thank you, Mr.
She
President.
Does proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. The term is happily.
I
happily yield.
I gladly yield.
Okay. All right. I'm going to start working in. I deem it an honor. How about that?
That sounds good.
Okay. Let's go back to where the senator from Buchanan went with you, and I just wanted to... Okay, current law has this under group health benefit plans. Any health carrier, okay?
Yeah.
And it's in Chapter 376.
Yeah.
Then you go, and he's putting this in 191.
Which... By saying no law, by leading with, how does he word it, notwithstanding any other provision of law to the contrary, we're essentially deeming 376 to be not worthless, but I mean we're superseding it with this law.
Right. On line 2 of page 2.
Yes.
No governmental entity. The way that is phrased, we're talking about the Medicaid system too here, aren't we?
Yes, we are.
Okay. Are we talking about Missouri Consolidated Health Plan for state employees?
Yes.
Okay. Then we go to public official. That's anybody from a mayor to a sheriff to a governor, a
absolutely
county executive.
And under governmental entities, I would say any political
Charlie
subdivision.
Shields, head of a hospital, I guess. Is he a public official over a public hospital? Medical
I
center.
Don't know the answer to that. A creative lawyer might get onto that and do that, but I don't know the
head
answer
head of
to
a
that.
Public hospital, is that a public official? I mean, it's overseen by a board, right?
It's a good question.
Okay. And then you have all this, and you have then shall discriminate, acting in a governmental capacity. So governmental capacity could be providing the plan, right?
Right.
Okay. Shall discriminate against or penalize an employee.
Yes.
Now, am I correct that that can be an individual, right?
Yes.
Okay. And so while he says it's about employers, he extends this to everybody.
Exactly right. As the senator from Buchanan pointed out, and he did a great job doing that, we are now creating a new cause of action on behalf of employees who object to their health plans.
Okay, and his solution is a marketplace, that the marketplace that Blue Cross or whoever your healthcare provider will say, well, we hear your objection and we're going to not treat you as part of the rest of the pool of employees of this company of 500 employees, and we're going to make a special provision to where you don't have to pay for the other 499 employees that want this in their plan, right?
That's not how we buy health care. That's what he's saying, but that's not how health care is purchased in this country.
Well, don't you find health care providers to be very agreeable?
No.
To changes all the time?
No.
And they, it's a very flawless system, isn't it? To
no.
Where they're very agreeable. You get them on the phone, they answer right away.
No.
They don't
do
that? They don't really answer things right away? And
they do not.
They don't make adjustments? Don't they just cover everything when you call about it?
No, they do not.
How about doctors? Don't they cover all the doctors and everything else?
No.
Okay, all right.
No.
Well, that was my sense, but I just wanted to make sure that wasn't the case. Okay, so then he goes to self-employed person, employer. Okay, then on line 9, he goes to other person's entity's unwillingness based on religious beliefs or moral convictions to obtain or provide coverage for, pay for, participate in, or refer for abortion, contraception, sterilization in a health plan. So at your law firm?
Yes.
You have a health plan, right?
I do.
Okay. So someone could have some objection to abortion, contraception, sterilization, right?
Yeah, well, except that in Missouri we've already passed a law, I think a couple of times, that says that we cannot provide abortion coverage with insurance in the state. So that's not even an option. So that's the fact that that's in here again is you know, kind of irrelevant, because it's actually state law right now, unless this supersedes it and throws that old law out. I don't know. But right now it is against the law in Missouri for an insurance plan to cover abortion. We've gone through that a couple of times in this body, once when I was here. But as to sterilization and contraception, you're right. My insurance at my law firm would cover contraception, and I'm assuming by sterilization that we're talking about essentially vasectomies or, tubal ligation or whatever those different, is that what we're talking about with sterilization?
I don't know. I haven't gotten to the definition of the term sterilization. That
okay.
was another kind of question I was going to
ask. But I'm assuming it is the decision to surgically, stop the reproductive cycle in the human body. I don't know. I'm not a doctor, as you can tell.
Okay. Then we go to 2. Whenever the Attorney General has reasonable cause to believe that any person or entity or group of persons or entities has been or is threatened to be denied any of the rights granted in this section. So now they would be able to, I object to your health plan at your law firm and my ratepayer money as part of that health plan paying for this, right? Okay. I now have a civil claim handled by the AG.
Yeah, and I've got my lawyer already hired, and all of my legal fees will be picked up by the Attorney General. So we're not only creating a cause of action for an employee who objects to their plan, but we are now saying that the state of Missouri is going to provide for free a lawyer to pursue that claim. That's a pretty good deal.
Well, I think the senator from Buchanan is right. The comfort level I have part of the discomfort level I have is that when we are taking this and extending it to not just employers or health care plan providers as current law, but now we're extending it or any other person or entity. When you read that, that's pretty broad, right?
It's incredibly broad.
That's everybody else.
And the reality,
this is supposed to be some limited extension of, again, that current law contemplates at the healthcare provider level. I mean, I'm not understanding that the language I don't think is precise.
You're exactly right, Senator. I mean, the reality is that if this simply was just an extension of the existing law to cover sterilization and add the AG piece, that could have been handled by attaching it to the existing law that we already have. But the reality is that an entire new bill has been drafted. Now, why it was drafted can be debated. I personally believe that right now it's a favorite talking point of a certain segment in society to pit religious beliefs versus contraception, access to health care. Unfortunately, I think both of those issues are very deeply held core values of all Americans, and we should not be pitting them against each other. It makes no sense whatsoever. But that's the discussion that this country has decided to have, so now we're in the discussion. Okay, so this bill gets filed. Well, what are we doing besides that? Well, we're actually now creating a new cause of action where if any employee disagrees with the coverage of their health plan, they can have the Attorney General file a suit on their behalf saying that I've been discriminated against because I'm being forced to put dollars into a plan and those dollars are being used on contraception or sterilization.
Right, and then the health care provider in the marketplace is supposed to suddenly offer the employer, large, small, some carve-out. But what if the question becomes, what if the marketplace doesn't solve it, and what if they don't?
They don't.
I mean, the free market, you're already in the free market with government coming in and saying da-da-da-da-da.
Right.
I mean, so this is not the invisible hand of Adam Smith involved in all of this. This is government saying, we're going to have and allow three things that you can object to, da-da-da-da-da.
Exactly. I mean, this is the big government
if,
that everyone
I
should
guess
be scared
if it's
of.
About, Senator, here's what I wonder also on this bill, getting beyond what the senator from Buchanan brought up, the mechanical problems with it. Why did we just pick those three things?
That's a good question.
I mean, if I'm part of a health plan and, you know, what about other things like end of life and those things and other things in the life issue? You know, I don't know why you wouldn't have a similar objection to those, right?
Exactly right. I mean, if this truly were just about the religious freedom that so many have tried to frame this argument to be about, then we would be talking about much broader issues. Because frankly, there are a large group of people out there who object to a lot of things. They object to vaccines. They object to blood transfusions. They object to all sorts of different procedures. And if we're talking about true religious freedom, then it shouldn't be limited to reproductive health. But it's limited to reproductive health because this isn't about religious freedom. This is about the national political debate as we head into the next presidential election.
Well, you remember those cases involving where because of the medical technology now available, someone is kept alive and it may or may not be their wishes. I mean, that's a life or death issue.
That's a big deal, Senator, and that's something
that,
frankly,
if abortion and contraception and sterilization deal with that issue, that's a life issue. Why wouldn't, if it's about religious belief, why wouldn't we want to extend this and define this more? Why would we want to just limit it to those three things?
You're right, Senator. If this is about religious belief, then those folks who believe in withholding or not withholding certain end-of-life health care, that debate should be included in this as well. Because the reality is that, I mean, look a few years ago in Florida with the situation with Terri Schiavo. I mean, goodness sake, didn't the Congress come together and try to pass a law to stop a feeding tube to be removed from that woman?
Right.
Is that how that all went? And the reality is if this was about a freedom of religion issue, that would be included in this debate as well. But it's not. It's not about freedom of religion. It's about a national political debate and those folks who want to try to find any weaknesses heading into the next presidential election.
So you had an inquiry with the senator from 23rd, and he said, well, this doesn't deny contraception to women.
That's true. Women can still...
Well, no, I'm not sure that's true. I mean, if healthcare providers now are subject to some animated lawsuit handled by the taxpayers through the AG, for some religious or moral belief. I mean, I assume they make money from this coverage, but what if, I mean, let's get back to the marketplace. What if they don't resolve all this in the marketplace?
Well,
what if they just choose not to provide this, and the remedy that he says is, well, they can just go pay for it elsewhere. I guess we can tell some of the other insurance mandates that we've talked about in the last few years, I guess they can go deal with it. Parents with autism, parents with children with autism, they can just pay for it on their own, right?
We deal with mandates in here on an almost yearly basis, Senator, and that's exactly right. I mean...
No, I mean, but he said, well, they can just pay for it on their own. Well, okay. We as a legislative body, very effectively, the senator from 15th worked on this issue. We all helped him. Okay, that's a mandate. I understand that that's a difficult thing for government to contemplate in the marketplace, but we didn't tell those parents, well, they can just pay for it.
No,
the whole
didn't.
Reason that we stepped forward under his leadership was to respond to it. Right?
That's right, Senator. And I'm not going to say in any way, shape, or form that...
That was the long arm of government telling an insurance carrier, you shall provide this.
That's true. And to be fair, Senator, the treatment for autism is dramatically more expensive than contraception. There's no question. But your point is still valid. That's exactly right. It is government mandating what insurance coverage must be provided.
But I'm just saying it's sort of like, well, they can just pay for it. Well, we heard a very valid case of other people who we didn't just say, well, you can just go pay for it in the marketplace. We created a mandate. The government got involved at some level.
That's right.
At the state level. To mandate those. So, anyway, Senator, it's your amendment. I appreciate the inquiry. And anyway, thank you for the inquiry, Senator.
Thank you, Senator.
We're on the Senate Amendment 1 to the Senate substitute. The Senator from Johnson is seeking recognition.
Thank you, Mr. President. With no objection, I have some special guests.
Hearing no objection, proceed.
I have some guests in the upper gallery from the University of Central Missouri. This is Speech Hearing Language Awareness Day, and they are here from the University of Central Missouri. Ironically, they're wearing red, so I would like to welcome them, and I'm using proper enunciation when I recognize them. Blaine Dusing is their leader.
Let's make the guests of the Senator from Johnson feel welcome as they join us today in the upper gallery. Does any other senator desire to be heard on Senate Amendment 1 offered by the senator from the 10th? The senator from the 13th, for what reason do you seek recognition?
To inquire the senator from the 10th.
Senator from the 10th, do you yield to the inquiry from the senator from the 13th?
I do.
She does proceed.
I just want to let you know I'm an equal opportunity, free employer that I do go to every attorney for legal advice on the Senate floor. So I just want to let you know it's not just the former senator from the 8th or the senator from the 27th.
Sure.
I also go to the senator from the 10th. I have actually been listening to the debate. I listened to the debate between the senator from the 10th and the senator from Buchanan. And it worries me how expansive this bill is. Let me ask you on reproductive health care initiatives, a hysterectomy.
Yeah.
Is that included in this?
You know, it's interesting that you would bring that up because I just received some information that would enlighten us on that. And the reality is that we don't know how sterilization is defined. It's not defined in this bill. And so it is possible that a hysterectomy could be included in this because that would be sterilization. And obviously, Senator, you know that a hysterectomy is something that is very rarely done for sterilization purposes, almost exclusively done for severe medical problems.
Right. Well, there's other forms that are not as extreme as a hysterectomy with the female, that are those going to be part of this exclusion? That I'm trying to properly say this on the Senate floor without saying it wrong, but are we going way, your answer is going to be we're going way too far, but we're including medical procedures that are elimination possibly of future reproduction at a later age due to health care issues for a female. I think we're going, from listening to you, way out on that fork in the road.
We are. The reality is, Senator, that without some clarification on what sterilization means, we could be allowing employers to opt out of coverage for things like removal of just the ovaries, because that would be considered sterilization, for removal of the fallopian tubes, for removal of the endometrial lining of the uterus. I mean, we could be, all of those things could be eliminated.
The last statement is a procedure that is used more and more with women as they get older, that you stated.
Absolutely.
Read it again.
Were you talking about the endometrial lining?
Yes.
Yeah, so it's pronounced, I believe, endometrial ablation or ablation. I apologize, I'm not a doctor. But when you have a woman with endometriosis, and I don't know if you want to talk about this, but we're talking about women's health today, so.
No, you're bringing up a valid point, and I don't want to get too personal on the issue, but I am familiar with that issue because of.
Sure, absolutely. Senator,
so
the reality is that several women.
Is an individual that is a Catholic, that has a spouse that is a Catholic. Some of these procedures are used for the health and benefit when we bring in the religious issue, and that's where I'm trying to go. Are we going too far down that path?
The answer is yes, Senator. We are going too far down that path, because when we don't have a definition of sterilization, we have no idea whether some of these medical procedures, which would actually be used by, you know, doctors on a routine basis, cause sterilization. Therefore, would they fall under this? And that's a problem. I mean, there are hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of women who suffer from endometriosis or similar type problems where they need to have parts of their endometrial lining removed. Or maybe we just have someone who has ovarian cancer and needs to have their ovaries removed. That will functionally sterilize the woman. Does that mean that this falls under that? I mean, we are casting a net that is so broad here that I am afraid the unintended consequences will not be realized until months or years from now.
No, I think it'll be sooner than years from now. I think it'll be quick. The discussion I'm having is very sincere because issues were brought up. This bill was heard in committee, and I asked that it be delayed for a week so we can research it a little bit. I was told no.
This was voted out the same week that it was heard?
It was voted out the same day.
The same day?
The same
day. Oh, so there's such an urgency to this.
And I politely asked, as a senator, that some traditions no longer hold, that could we delay this so we could do some research on it? I had two questions on that bill. We heard it last Wednesday and voted it out 15 minutes later. And I says, could we just delay it maybe a day? No, we cannot delay it a day. So I have issues that you're bringing up right now, trying to get some of these.
Three senators on the floor, the senator from 24th.
This bill over and then formal calendar?
The bill. Say your inquiry.
Mr. President, does the senator from the 13th have the floor right now?
He does. There are three senators on the floor.
And when we return, will he continue to have the floor?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. President.
The bill shall be laid on the informal calendar. The senator from the 23rd district. The bill. Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of reports of standing committees.
Reports of standing committees.
Senate shall go to the order of reports of standing committees. Senator from Saline.
Mr. President, your Committee on Transportation has a report.
Senator, please send that report forward. Madam Secretary, when it arrives at the dais, please read the report.
Mr. President, your Committee on Transportation, to which was referred Senate Bill 648, begs leave to report that it is considered the same and recommends that the Senate Committee substitute hereto attached do pass. Also, Senate Bill 568 begs leave to report that it is considered the same and recommends that the Senate Committee substitute hereto attached do pass. Respectfully, Senator Stouffer, Chairman.
Senator from the 7th District.
Mr. President, I have a report from the General Laws Committee.
Thank you, Senator. Please send that report forward. Please read the report.
Mr. President, your Committee on General Laws, to which was referred Senate Bill 690, begs leave to report that it is considered the same and recommends that the bill do pass. Also, Senate Bill 578 begs leave to report that it is considered the same and recommends that the bill do pass. Respectfully, Senator Cunningham, Chairman.
Senator from Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your hardworking Education Committee has two reports.
Thank you, Senator. I'm always amazed at the level of achievement. Please send that report forward. Madam Secretary, please read the report.
Mr. President, your Committee on Education, to which was referred Senate Bill 562, begs leave to report that it is considered the same and recommends that the Senate Committee substitute hereto attached do pass. Also, Senate Bill 563 begs leave to report that it is considered the same and recommends that the Senate Committee substitute hereto attached do pass. Respectfully, Senator Pierce, Chairman.
Senator from the 15th.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Committee on Jobs, Economic Development, and Local Government has a report.
Thank you, Senator. Please send the report forward. Madam Secretary, please read the report.
Mr. President, your Committee on Jobs, Economic Development, and Local Government, to which was referred Senate Bill 763, begs leave to report that it is considered the same. And Senate Bill 736 begs leave to report that it is considered the same and recommends that the bill do pass. Respectfully, Senator Schmidt, Chairman.
Madam Secretary, would you please refer Senate Joint Resolution 26 to Ways and Means and Fiscal Oversight? Thank you. Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would you see if there are messages from the House? And if there are, would you please have them read?
There has been a message sent from the House. It shall be read.
Mr. President, I am instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House has taken up and passed House Concurrent Resolution 8, a concurrent resolution relating to the disapproval of the Missouri State Tax Commission's recommendations regarding the value for each grade of agricultural and horticultural land based on productive capability, in which the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Respectfully, Daniel Adam Crumless, Chief Clerk.
Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of announcements.
Order of business is announcements. Senator from Clay.
Mr. President, I have an announcement.
Please proceed.
Your Committee on Health, Mental Health, Children and Families will be resuming the committee hearing that we started this morning in recess immediately when we adjourn or recess in SCR 1.
Thank you, Senator. Senator from Johnson.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. Although it is not an official meeting of the Senate Education Committee, we are going to jointly meet with the House Education Committee at 2 o'clock today in House Hearing Room 5 to hear an informal presentation from the St. Louis State Appointed Board. It should be from around 2 to 2:45 today, HHR 5. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Senator from the 11th, are you seeking recognition? Seeing no further announcements, Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. No further business coming before the body. I move the Senate stand adjourned under the rules.
You've heard the motion from the Senator from the 23rd that the Senate shall stand adjourned under the rules. All in favor of that motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The Senate shall stand adjourned under the rules.